All right, I will call this hearing of the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee to order. Today is January 5th, 2023. All hearings are recorded and live streamed, and we are here in person. So high five to everybody who made it here. I know the roads were not great this morning, and I know we've got some folks with closed schools as well. So we do have a quorum present. Today, we are going to pass a bill today, hopefully with support from both sides. But I did, before we get into that, just want to remind members of, now that we're in person, and we've got several first-term members on this committee, I'm not going to do a roll call for attendance, but if you are running late or you need to be in multiple places at one time, I just need you to check in with my staff so that they know what's happening, and so that we know that technically you are here. I'm not going to be a jerk about marking people excused. I know we're all juggling multiple things, but I do need you to communicate with staff. As far as procedural motions, as far as approval of minutes, everything like that, you know, we'll do that by voice vote unless someone requests a roll call. It's a little bit different from Zoom times when everything was a roll call for posterity. And also, this is a rule that's just not in our written rules, but is a rule for me. The whole, like, you have to bring treats the first time you have a hearing thing is not how I roll. If you choose to bring goodies for your colleagues at any time, it will be welcome, but do not feel pressure to do that, first-term members. That's not a thing that I care for. I remember being a first-term member with two kids in daycare and a pay cut to come work here, and we're not going to do that, but you can bring treats whenever you want. So I know Representative Feist brought some coffee this morning, so thank you, Representative Feist. Yeah. Yeah, good way to start off, free stuff. So before we move into formal committee business today, I did want to have everyone introduce themselves. We've got some new staff. We've got new members here today. So I will kick things off. So Representative Jamie Becker Finn, I'm serving this is now my fourth term. My second term is chair of this committee. I use she, her pronouns. I live in the Roseville Shoreview area, District 40B. And we do good work in this committee. And I really have always appreciated Lead Scott as a partner in this work. So we're a busy committee. We get a lot of referrals. We dig into some nerdy stuff, but we like it that way, and we're going to pass a lot of bills. So with that, we'll just kind of I'm going to have actually my staff introduce themselves first. I didn't tell you how to speak in the microphone today. Sorry, guys. So we'll start with Anna, since you've done this before.
I'm Anna Borgrading. I'm the CA for the Judiciary Committee and also Sustainable Infrastructure. I'm going into my third year at the House, which is very exciting, and I am not new to this committee, so I've seen many of you before.
Yay. Always good to have experienced staff. Go ahead, Ella.
I'm Ella Schultz. I am the LA for Rep. Becker Finn, and then I'm also the CA, the committee assistant for this committee as well. And I started last week, and so I'm looking forward to getting to know all you better.
Yep, started last week, and then we had vacation days and all that. Yep. So, but Ella's here and ready to go, and got all your folders at your desk. Go ahead, Vice Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Representative Cedric Frazier, District 43A, which is the cities of New Hope and Crystal. This is my second term. Pronouns he, him, his. Good to be here, everybody.
I am State Representative Peggy Scott. I'm from Andover. My district is going north from there this time instead of south. So. I have portions of the cities of Ham Lake and Oak Grove, and then I have East Bethel and two townships, one in Isandy County, and that would be Athens Township, and one in Anoka County, which is Linwood Township. So, and just a very small swath of my own city of Andover. So this will be my eighth term. So glad to be here.
Representative Matt Grousel, I'm in my fourth term. I've got District 2A. It's right dead center in the middle of the state in the north. I've got from the city of Bemidji to the Angle Inlet, the northwest angle. It's God's country. I live where everybody wants to vacation, so everybody's welcome to come there and visit and stay if you want to.
Vacation down here.
I come down here come to the south to warm up.
Representative Brian Johnson from Cambridge, House District 28A. This is my sixth term here. I think I've done, this is my fifth time on judiciary and civil law. It's a very good committee to be on, and I'm a firm believer that every member of this body should spend time on civil law to understand the unintended consequences of some of the bills that we do pass. Looking forward to this year.
Hello, I'm Mark Weens. I'm from 41A, which is south in western Washington County. I live in Lake Elmo. First time on judiciary, first time freshman. Looking forward to working with y'all. Thank you.
My name is Harry Niska. I was just elected to represent District 31A, which is in western Anoka County. Before redistricting, I was a constituent of Representative Scott, and so I'm very excited to be here to represent the area I grew up in, Ramsey and western part of Andover, and also to work with Representative Scott and all of you.
We'll do staff too. You guys are very important.
Thank you. Callie Lehman, GOP Research. I have been working at the House for 8 years and on some form of the Judiciary Committee for 8 years.
I'm Zach Meinertz with DFL Research. I'm also on public safety, and today's my third day on the job. Happy to be here.
All right, we'll kick it to Representative Curran.
Representative Breon Curran from 36B. With redistricting, Chair Becker Finn was my representative prior. This is my first term. I hail from Vadnais Heights. I also represent White Bear Lake, Gem Lake, Birchwood Village, and parts of White Bear Township. Glad to be here.
Representative Lee Finke, this is my first term representing District 66A. I live in St. Paul. I also represent parts of Roseville and Falcon Heights and Lauderdale, and I use she, her pronouns.
Representative Luke Frederick from District 18B. This is my second term in the legislature, first time on judiciary, and I'm looking forward to learning from everyone's experience here. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. Representative Sandra Feist. My district is 39B, which is the southern part of New Brighton, Columbia Heights, and St. Anthony. I practice immigration law, and I'm an immigration law professor adjunct at St. Thomas, so I love the nerdy law stuff. I'm very excited to be here. This is my second time on judiciary, and my pronouns are she, her. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm Representative Kelly Moeller, and I represent 40A, Arden Hills, Moundsview, part of Shoreview, the northern part of New Brighton. This is my third term, and I use she, her pronouns.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Nathan Hopkins. I'm a nonpartisan legislative analyst with the House Research Department. I work on civil law issues and government data practices issues.
John Walls, House Fiscal Staff. I've been here for a really long time. And I handle fiscal notes and things having to do with spending money, so if you have a question on those, let me know and I'll be happy to help.
Ben Johnson, also with the House Research Department. I primarily handle the judiciary-related issues in this committee. I also staff the Public Safety Committee, and I drew the short straw and am in charge of the cannabis bill this session.
Chair and members, Mary Mullen. I'm also from the House Research Department. I very recently changed my last name to Davis because I got married last summer. So just to confuse everyone right at the beginning of session, my email and my nameplates will be changing to Davis. If you call me Mary Mullen on the record, that is completely fine. And I do civil law, so I do what people think of as torts, housing, real estate, landlord-tenant, family law, all those kinds of issues that come through our committee. So feel free to reach out with questions.
Congratulations. We could have made our own name tag for you. That was correct. I do think it's important to get people's names right. So we will. I shall do my best. Late arrival, our Representative Carroll, if you could just introduce yourself and tell us where you're from.
Thank you, Chair. And I'm very sorry. I tried my best to get here on time. Something with the roads and ice and everything. I didn't have skates on my tires. It feels like I left last night as soon as I got home. That's how long it took me, so I'm very sorry for being late.
Yeah, you get a couch.
Okay, yeah. So I'm Ned Carroll. I'm a new rep. I'm from 42A, which is Plymouth, a little bit of Maple Grove, I'm delighted to be here, especially serving under our chair, who I know from our previous work at the Hennepin County Attorney's Office.
All right. Thank you, Representative Carroll. And thank you. That's a good vice chair there. And then, again, because we've got several new folks on this committee, if you do want to speak, you can get the attention of Ella or Anna, and they'll get you on a list, and then we'll call on you. And I'm trying to think if there's any other housekeeping brand new people. Basically, our House research staff and fiscal staff, our nonpartisan staff, are amazing. There aren't stupid questions. It's better to ask them and make sure you're on the right track than to become frustrated and spin your wheels. They are here to help us, and they do an excellent job. So I can never say enough about you guys, and I'm sorry that you have the marijuana bill. That'll be a heavy lift. So with that, we're going to move a bill today. I know that I think a couple of our we've got Representative Badge. So we are going to move to House File 37. The bill and the accompanying materials are in your packets. So Representative Badge, if you could come on up. And then I will move that House File 37 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Representative Egbadje, I believe you have a very short amendment. So I will also move the, I believe it's the A1 amendment. And if you could just briefly explain the amendment.
The amendment is very simple. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It is basically a spelling change. LOCKS should be spelled L-O-C-S and not L-O-C-K-S.
All right, any discussion to the amendment? All right, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, the amendment fails. So we've got House File 37, House File 30, it's weird to have a bill that's just like two, I know. House File 37 as amended is now before us. Representative Egbadje, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm glad to be in front of the Judiciary Committee again, bringing forward this bill. This year it is House File 37, and the name of this bill is the Crown Act. The Crown Act stands for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair. So you might be asking, well, what does that mean? The purpose of this bill is to basically expand the definition of race in the Minnesota Human Rights Act to include race-based traits like hair textures and styles, including braids, twists, and locks. The language will clarify that Minnesota will not tolerate discrimination based on hair. Across the country and in the state of Minnesota, we have had incidents of people experiencing discrimination because of how their hair grows naturally from their head. As recently as April of last year, a young black boy's afro was cut at school without his parents' permission. And we've also seen cases where employees will use textured hair dress codes as a way to target black employees under the guise that black hair is unprofessional, messy, or distracting. In fact, the Dove company has done research, and I think as recently as 2021, they've shown that black women are 1.5 times more likely to be sent home because of the way that they wear their hair. And usually that's because they're wearing an afro style or a twist style, which is the way their hair grows or a protective style for their hair. Enacting a bill like this will make it clear that such discrimination will no longer be tolerated, because what we're seeing is that it's kind of being used as a proxy for race discrimination based on skin color. So this bill is really important to me because I myself have also felt that pressure to straighten my hair because of the fear of losing a job or not being taken as seriously. And I did straighten my hair for most of my life. I think I only just started going natural and wearing protective styles about 5 years ago. And that was the time where I realized I needed to allow myself to be myself. And I am glad to continue to carry this bill to ensure that people have the freedom to show up as they are and who they are in school and at work and focus at the task at hand rather than worrying about if their hair will be the cause of the loss of an education or the loss of earning an income. The effects of not knowing about whether one must change their hair to be accepted can lead to devastating consequences, not only about a person's well-being, but in their sense of self, but it also leads to physical detrimental health. In 2022, the NIH released a study that women who use relaxers or chemical straighteners for their hair were more likely to develop uterine cancer than those who did not. There's also hair breakage and damage that happens from having to pull your hair back if you need to keep it that way, or continuing to use heat products or, again, chemicals to keep it straight. So again, this bill would allow people to show up as their authentic selves in varied spaces and not be denied employment, educational, or athletic opportunities because of the natural texture of their hair. We do have a number of supporters for this bill, particularly in the community as well as the business sector. So groups like the Twin Cities Urban League and their Young Professionals Chapter, National Urban League, the Black Women's Wealth Alliance, the Council on Minnesotans of African Heritage, as well as businesses here in Minnesota that make up the Minnesota Business Coalition for Racial Equity. And I think some of them have sent in letters of support that you should have in your packet. And so I believe some of my testifiers might be in the room now. Madam Chair, I'm happy to transition to that.
Yep. For everyone's edification, we will go ahead with the presentation of the bill, and then if you do have questions, we can get to that after we get to through the presentation of the bill. The first person I have on the list is Vachel Hudson, and I apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Vachel Hudson. I am a homeowner and landlord in North Minneapolis. I serve as a banker at First Independence Bank and have the pleasure of serving as the immediate past president of the Urban League Twin Cities Young Professionals, which is an auxiliary chapter of the National Urban League Young Professionals, where I serve on the National Advocacy Committee. I'll speak on behalf of my community, peers, local chapter members, and my network when I say we support and need the Crown Act passed. After sharing my story of being told by a former employer that I look more cleaner and successful if I cut my locks off with the community and media outlets last year during our educational campaign awareness around this bill, I also had the privilege and opportunity to share space, hear from, and create a platform for those in community who had also consciously and unconsciously dealt with hair discrimination, whether it would be at their workplace, in their schools, or on a sports team. I've heard from military vets, elected officials, Fortune 500 employees, nurses, hairstylists, teachers and students in all levels of schools, parents of biracial children, entrepreneurs who left the workplace due to some of these discriminatory practices. And it also impacted individuals and families of more than one particular race. For me personally, I embrace my locks today because I know that our youth and our community will have more upside and have more impact to society when we're exposed to more positive role models who look like us. And we perform better when we can show up and be our authentic selves in the workplaces. That's what diversity is, right? So as the epicenter of a national global racial awakening, as I shared last year, Minnesota continues to be under the microscope. Talk to my peers all the time across the country, and they want to know what we're doing next, where we're going, what direction we're heading in. And I just say that, the passing of this Crown Act will allow us to be able to be our best selves, be our most authentic selves, perform better, but also in addition to this, impacting our mental health. So we ask that you do pass the Crown Act today. I just want to say thank you again for taking the time out to hear not just my testimony, but testimony of others. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. So next on the list, I believe we have Commissioner Lucero. Welcome to in-person committee. please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Chair Becker-Finn, and members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Lucero, and I'm the commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. To those of you I have not met, welcome. I look forward to meeting and working with you. To those I've worked with in the past, it's good to see you again. It's particularly good to see you in person, and I look forward to the work ahead. So I want to begin by thanking Representative Faje, the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, Urban League, Black Women's Wealth Alliance, and many other community partners for continued leadership and support of the Crown Act through the years. I'd also really just like to take a minute to thank this committee for making this the first bill hearing session. It demonstrates how important the Crown Act is and highlights the intentional work of ending race discrimination in Minnesota. And you know, now is the time to get this bill passed. Last year, the Minnesota House of Representatives passed the Crown Act off the floor with overwhelming bipartisan support. Had a new legislative body, but let's see if we can beat what we did last time. The bill passed with 104 votes off the floor. And so the time is now to get this done. We've heard powerful stories of both in previous years and this year from testifiers that confirm that the time is now to pass this bill. And so when I talk about the Crown Act, as the commissioner for the agency that oversees the Minnesota Human Rights Act, I am almost always asked two questions. So I want to just go ahead and address them head on here today. So the first question that I get asked is some version of, is this really necessary? As you heard today from testifiers, it is, and I just want to expand on that for a moment here. So a 2020 research article published in the Journal of Social, Psychological, and Personality Science by professors from Michigan State and Duke Universities showed a bias against, in this situation, black female job applicants. The authors found that black women with natural hairstyles were, quote, perceived to be less professional, less competent, and less likely to be recommended for a job interview than black women with straightened hairstyles, and then with white women with either curly or straight hairstyles. So first impressions matter. We all know that. We work in this field. This is especially true when someone is applying for a job, where employers are making quick judgments about applicants based on their appearance, sometimes within a matter of seconds, oftentimes completely unconscious, based on how we've been raised in this society. And so when there are policies in place and the policies are codified in schools and in workplaces that prevent someone with natural hairstyles from working and going to school, it is amplifying and codifying those biases and discriminations. This is not a unique story. It's not new. Since long before the beginning of the country's existence, black hair has always been something that is both officially and unofficially regulated, and we can do something about that to make a change here today. So it is important to explicitly name the protections of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. The second question I get asked is, okay, but what about health and safety, or some version of that question? And so I just want to make sure I'm addressing that dead on as well. So state law continues to give employers the ability to adopt policies for health and safety, schools as well, of course. In fact, state and federal laws often require employers to adopt policies around health and safety. That does not change. Natural black hairstyles, however, do not create more health and safety risks than non-black natural hairstyles. And in fact, as Representative Akwaje testified to, health is actually one of the reasons why many black Minnesotans choose a natural hairstyle. So the Minnesota Department of Human Rights strongly supports the Crown Act because black hair discrimination is race discrimination. I really want to thank you for your time, and when it's time, I stand for any questions.
All right, thank you for your testimony. I think there's another testifier on their way. So at this point, I will ask if there are any members of the public who are here today who would like to testify. All right, well, while we wait for our last testifier, maybe Commissioner, maybe don't go too far. We can, members, we'll entertain some questions, and if our last testifier makes it here, we will make time for that as well. Members, do we have any questions about the bill? Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker Finn, Commissioner Lucero. You touched a little bit of some of the issues about health and safety. I'm just wondering, my intention, I actually have a good friend that's been dealing with this, and I am planning on voting for this bill, but I need to get a little bit more on the record of how things are going to work with this. There's some times where with this bill, there could be interference between what the bill says and what OSHA or health regulations come in play. I'm just wondering how your department would handle something where it may be considered a discrimination suit, but it also falls under for OSHA or the Minnesota Department of Health would require something to be done. How would your office handle that?
Commissioner.
Chair Beckerfin, Representative Johnson, thank you for your question. And so, yes, the state law already gives employers or federal law the ability to adopt policies for health and safety standards. And this is still permitted to happen. And so it's hard for me to understand a situation where there is a conflict of OSHA and health safety around natural black hairstyles. I can imagine many situations where somebody of any race may have, for instance, be working in a food situation and have any hair, and that needs to be put in a net. Maybe sometimes face nets if you have a beard or for your head. And that would be true for every single one of us working in a food place. And so there are hair nets for food safety. There's also construction sites where people have different size construction helmets based on the size of your head. I have a close family member who is not black with a very big head. Maybe you have a similar friend. They work in construction. They get a bigger construction hat, to accommodate what their needs are there. So this already exists to make sure that somebody can both have their naturally occurring bigger head and a hat that they need to do their construction. Of course, and so I'm struggling to understand what this scenario is, and maybe you can help me.
Representative Johnson.
Chair Beckerfin, Commissioner Rosaro. I'm looking at a machine shop where somebody with very long hair in braids getting caught in the machinery.
Sure.
Commissioner.
So it's an issue that's got to be, we have to do it carefully. Like I say, I'm in support of this bill. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that we have everything in line, so if an unfortunate accident happens, we can avoid them. And because of an accident, there wouldn't be a discrimination suit.
Right.
So I'm trying to thread the needle.
Yep, and I, Commissioner, tell me if I'm getting it right, but you know, a lot of Native folks have longer hair, and it would sort of, I think what you're saying is that it's not, the rules apply whether it's a black hairstyle or a Native hairstyle or a white hairstyle, whatever your hair is, it's more about the length of the hair and you tying it back. Commissioner, if I'm getting it right.
Chair Beckerfin, Representative Johnson. One thing that might be helpful if I just take a quick step back is under the Minnesota Human Rights Act and a whole lot of case law, the way we do the analysis around this is you have to be able to show that the discrimination that you believe exists because of a protected class status. Right? And so if you believe that you are being discriminated against because you have long hair with braids, everybody of every race is being treated the same there. So the distinction is not because of a protected class status. The distinction is because of long hair. That is not necessarily a protected class status. You can run into a few other places there, especially with religion and political affiliation with Native. Of course, it can always get complicated under the law. But do you hear me? But I hope I'm being clear that it's not because of race, it's because of long hair. And so, of course, you can have a requirement for everyone with long hair, in braids or not, that it should be tied up. And they have nets that do that right now. It happens every day.
May I add, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Representative Madam Chair and Representative Johnson, for the question. The other thing, too, to be aware of is usually when attorneys see these cases, one of the things that they look for is ensuring that whatever grooming or appearance policies that are in place in a workplace are applied neutrally and that they're applied to everyone, as the commissioner described. So in a situation like that with long hair, it would have to be everyone with long hair is facing the same type of situation, or everyone who works in this workplace has to have this certain length of hair. So then it doesn't become an issue of your protected class.
All right, final follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Chair Beckerfin, Representative Abajay, Commissioner Lucero. I understand that. I just wanted to make sure that was on the record, so if something happens down the road, we, and it goes to the appellate court or something, we have that in the record.
We like having things on the record. Let's see. I've got Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. And thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill, and Commissioner Lucero for being here. And just by way of getting things on the record, I just want to say how excited I am to be a part of this committee and to be able to pass bills like this, bills that maybe don't have top 10 bill introduction matter behind them, but like literally change the lives of the daily experience of Minnesotans. And being able to, as the story we heard earlier, being able to present oneself authentically and not walk into a room and immediately be judged by either institutional racism or personal bias, I think is extremely important. And I just wanted to come back to the point that was made about students and students being policed and presentation being policed. This is a serious issue in my community. Black trans kids especially are policed around their hair and clothing. So I would just like to hear a little more about how this will reach into schools in those environments.
Yeah. Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kinke. Yeah, that is a very good point that you bring up. So part of the reason why there's now this national movement around the Crown Act is because so many young people, particularly black girls, before even the age of 5, have faced some type of discrimination based on their hair and their appearance. And so having a law like this and the education around it allows us to start to create a society where everyone is accepted, where their sense of self is brought up, and where they're not made to feel that something is wrong with them because their hair may grow differently, or they may choose to wear a different type of style that will protect their natural texture. And so I think a really big part of this is that it is really going to be helpful for young people as they create their continued sense of self, that they won't feel outcasted. I know last year when we were on the floor, a former representative talked about how his students on his wrestling team, you know, they all had come together to make sure that students there felt safe to be able to show up and play the way that they wanted to. And so I think that this continues to be a way that we're showing throughout all of, in the state of Minnesota, as well as throughout the country, ways that we are making sure that our children feel respected, feel seen, and feel heard, and that they know that they can show up as their true self.
Any follow-up?
No, thank you very much.
All right. Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Lucero, as I've asked before, is this is already covered under the Human Rights Act. Is that correct?
Commissioner.
Chair Becker-Finn, Representative Boston, thank you for that question. The Minnesota Human Rights Act does cover race discrimination, yes.
Okay, so
Representative Grossel.
Oh, sorry. I apologize. Got to get back in the
Yep. <terms.
laughs> Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So a case that would come up like this, it would be handled in the same way. Am I misunderstanding something here?
Commissioner.
Chair Becker-Finn, I am also used to getting trying to get back into the flow of things, too. Representative Russell, our department has accepted these type of cases and will today accept these kind of cases. And as we have testified to, it is important to explicitly name the protection in the Minnesota Human Rights Act. There continues to be a gap here, and there's an opportunity to be transparent and explicit about this very specific kind of discriminatory impact, again, race-based discriminatory impact, excuse me.
Representative Grossel.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, and so I guess, Madam Chair, you mentioned Native American folks. They also have quite long hair. I mean, Vice Chair Frazier.
Every time.
Does not have a dog in this fight right now. And before I grew my hair out, I didn't either. So, but would this also cover any nationality as far as the hair length, or is this specifically for black Americans?
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Brossel, for the question. So this is a law that is protective for everyone. The purpose of this law, while many of the stories do come from the Black community, it is not specific only to the Black community. As Madam Chair mentioned earlier, there are Native American groups as well as other religious groups that also have ways that they wear their hair mm-hmm. in a traditional or protective style. There are also white men who have worn long hair, have also gone to court to be able to wear their hair long. And at the same time, we also find that what is happening is because of the various laws that are in place about, you know, equality and fairness, people are still finding ways around it. And so what they're using is this proxy kind of hair in order to continue discrimination. So what this bill would allow us to do is just continue to make it very clear that the way that your hair naturally grows from your head, especially because it is a trait that is often related to people of African descent, the hair just grows curlier, the shaft is different, the way it retains water is different. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, it needs to be done in a way, not in the same way as other hairstyles that maybe are have different descriptions for it. So that's what this law would do, and it would just make it very clear, because one of the other things that's also helpful, sorry, I keep going in different tangents, but the other thing that's really helpful about why that's necessary is because court systems need to know explicitly what the law says. And so part of the reason why this movement started is because there was a court case in the 11th Circuit that said that natural hair was not the same as race, or was trying to make a distinction between it, which we know for certain communities that that's not true. And so by having this law in place that other states have done, it makes it very clear that hair discrimination is also race-based discrimination. I hope that was helpful.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. Final follow-up. We got a couple people on the list now.
Okay, all right, I appreciate it. I'm not making light of this bill or anything like that. I just had to take that poke at Representative Frazier over there. Just, I can't help it. It's just fun. It's fun teasing him sometimes. But, you know, I look at this. It's covered under the human rights, and I am not one that wants to put more laws on our citizens. People should be treating each other as they wish to be treated. And if we have laws in place already to take care of that, then we need to do that. I mean, we are all fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God, every one of us. And we need to walk by that, and treat each other in accordance with that. I know there are exceptions where people don't do that, and that needs to be stopped. So I do appreciate the intent of what you want to do here. So I would ask the Department of Human Rights, when these things come up, make sure that those people are brought back into compliance as far as how they're treating other human beings. So I don't like unnecessary laws being added. That is my concern, and that's across the board. Apply and execute and prosecute the laws that we have on the books. We have plenty of laws on the books already. But most of all, I would hope that we as a society would treat each other as we wish to be treated and take care of each other. I mean, that's the bottom line for me. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear your support for the Department of Human Rights having the tools they need to keep people compliant. Representative Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner and Representative Agbaje, I wanted to follow up a little bit on the extent to which there does continue to be a gap, or that there is a concern that the current Minnesota Human Rights Act doesn't already cover this. My understanding is that the Department of Human Rights position is the current statute would prohibit the instances of discrimination where hair is used as a proxy for race, and I understand there's an 11th Circuit case maybe was inconsistent with that position, but is there any case law in Minnesota or that Minnesota courts would consider persuasive that would support someone who is under current law discriminating on the basis of or using hair as a proxy for race discrimination?
Representative or commissioner, I don't know which one of you wants to take it.
Thank you, Chair Beckerman. Thank you, Representative. So taking a step back, it is always important to make sure that the laws that we do have in place provide clarity and transparency. This is not an additional law. This is providing necessary clarity about something that there continues to be a gap on. I appreciate the that we need to do compliance after there's a problem. An opportunity to be clear about the fact that hair discrimination is race discrimination sends a powerful message to, hey, why don't we, school districts, employers, make sure that we don't have any grooming policies that are creating this unintended consequence and resulting in this. And so hair discrimination is race discrimination in Minnesota. That is the law. And providing clarity is a very valuable tool that we can always be doing to update our laws. Remember, the Minnesota Human Rights Act is over 50 years old, and taking an opportunity to clarify and tighten things is something that we should be doing, and this is a place where that should be occurring.
Any follow-up, Representative Niska?
Yes, thank you, Chair Beckerfin and Commissioner Lucero, or Representative Agbaji. So if I understood what you just said, the position of the department is that hair discrimination is race discrimination under current Minnesota law. Is there any case law in Minnesota or that Minnesota courts would find persuasive that's inconsistent with that position under the Human Rights Act as it's currently written before we amend it as proposed here?
Commissioner.
Representative, thank you. Chair, thank you. Thank you for the question. No, no case law. And yes, lots of examples of people experiencing discrimination every single day. And so the need for clarity exists.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, since we have you in the seat before us, I have kind of a related question when you make the statements about necessary clarity. And so I'm wondering, under the religious exemptions in the Department of Human Rights Act, is there clarity on this subject in the religious realm for, say, some, you know, many religions have different hairstyles, the Hasidic Jews, some Muslim communities. So I'm wondering if that's clarified under the religious exemption as well.
Commissioner.
Chair Beckerfin, Representative Scott, thank you for the question. Yeah, actually, the Minnesota Human Rights Act has quite a bit of extensive elements to it around religious discrimination. And I'd be happy to come back and do a presentation on that or talk to you offline about those different elements around it. So certainly if somebody who is Jewish feels like they're being discriminated against because they are Jewish, and perhaps one of the markers of that is the way they may be wearing their hair, encourage them to contact the Minnesota Department of Human Rights.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure I heard an answer, a definitive answer in there. If there's a religious, in the religious piece, does it address hair?
And I'll just as a reminder, because you know I do this all the time, but the issue here before us is whether we should be adding this subdivision. So just so we don't get too far afield of the bill that's actually before us. But Commissioner Lucero, go ahead.
So Chair Beckerfin, Representative Scott, it does not explicitly mention hair in that scenario. Why we are explicitly mentioning it here is because there is a historic and sustained problem with how natural black hairstyles are done that is resulting in biased and discriminatory outcomes. And so the need for clarifying that is really important. I have not had an outpouring of constituents come to me and talk about Hasidic hairstyles needing to be clarified in the Minnesota Human Rights Act, but I'm more than happy to have that conversation with any constituents who have that concern.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one final question, and this is going back to the bill in place. This would probably go to the bill's author. Is there anything that you have planned to make this, if this bill becomes law, how are you going to let the business community know of this change? And is there going to be any training? Is there going to be anything that goes out to the business community about this specification? Thank you very much.
Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. Yes, I've actually had this discussion with the commissioner. We have talked about how there will be trainings that will go out, outreach that comes from the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. A number of employment attorneys have already started posting blog posts, kind of providing insight into how employers can implement this law in their workplace. And so I think through that, and I also think through continued sustained efforts to make sure that the agency has the tools that they need to continue their outreach efforts and to continue their education practices with employers will really help make sure that more businesses understand should this bill become law.
All right, and we do have a couple other questions on the list, but our final testifier arrived, so we're gonna move to have them come testify. Kenya McKnight. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay? My name is Kenya McKnight Ahad. I am the CEO and founder of the Black Women's Wealth Alliance, resident of Minneapolis, resident of Minnesota for the past 40 years. So I grew up here as a six-year-old. In my work, I work with black mothers, youth, and just regular old folks who are business owners as well as career professionals in the workplace. And I sit here before you today really proud and happy to represent for this bill, but also to be in this moment for me, which is historic. As you know, natural hair, I mean, it's a part of who we are. It's a part of our identity. And for me, I think that it's so important that we normalize who we are as black African-American people. And changing our hair, altering it, should be a choice, not a requirement. And this is something that we've struggled with since the inception of this country. But it's something that's so paramount to who we are. It has a tremendous impact on our children to be in the classroom to have your hair cut off because your hair is made differently than those around you. This is not an option. It's who we are. It's how we're born. We don't have a choice, but we are proud of it. And we want our state to embrace what that means to us as being human beings and the value that it also brings, not only to our economy, as we know, our hair, is a billion-dollar industry across this country, billions of dollars. It's something that we take pride in. It's something that we wake up every morning feeling good about, being able to wear our hair in braids, being able to wear our hair poofy, being able to wear our hair however we want. And it makes our children feel special as well. And so I'm here strongly encouraging you to also embrace this historic moment that we're in to create legacy in Minnesota, to send the message that not only just some of us, but all of us matter. And we accept everybody for who they are from where they are in this great state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Glad you could make it.
Yes, and pardon me for not addressing you properly, Madam Chair.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you again for being here and sharing your testimony. We do have a couple other members with questions that we will get to. And then just as a reminder, we do have to wrap up by 9:45 because we have a kind of weird session time today. So Representative Feist.
I can talk. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to provide an employer's perspective. I have my own law firm. I have 10 employees, started my firm 12 years ago. And I just want to emphasize what Commissioner Lucero said about clarity being so helpful and employment law being particularly unintuitive in my experience. Definitely employment law issues arise from time to time. And in terms of like business community awareness, I find that if I have any question at all, I just ask an employment law attorney And oftentimes the law is not clear or not intuitive. I had the opportunity to meet with Commissioner Lucero last year, and she did a PowerPoint for me. Sorry, I should speak into the mic. And provided me some examples, and it was really interesting to see how the law is not always intuitive from an employer's perspective. So I think this is just such an important law that we are hearing today, and I really appreciate you bringing it to us. And just as an employer, I think it will be incredibly helpful to all businesses in Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Weens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Dodge. I think we all agree dignity and self-expression is very important in our society. And my concern is on the clarity on the workplace safety and health. And I don't know if I can offer a friendly amendment. I intend to support this, but I would ask under the clarity piece that this would not impinge on any workplace safety and health protocols, laws, and regulations as an additive part. And Madam Chair, if you can tell me if I'm doing this properly or it has to be in writing, triplicate 3 days before, I'm a freshman.
Yep. Well, so you've got a couple options here, Representative. If you are actually asking that we move an amendment, typically amendments need to be filed ahead of time. Your other option would be to talk with the author of the bill offline after this committee and see if there's some clarification that the author may be willing to do. We are sending this to General Register, so it would be on the floor. But those are kind of your options. So that's why the rules went out, were emailed out to everyone. Usually in this committee, noon the day before for amendments. But if you haven't had that, my advice to you is someone who's been here longer is, typically, especially if you are intending it to be friendly, to have that conversation beforehand with the author of the bill and kind of try to reach some common ground together, as opposed to sort of trying to do an oral amendment on the fly that research is not aware of and hasn't been properly noticed to the public. Is that's the other reason we need the time, is we like the public to be able to know, if it's something like we're going to move a period or we accidentally got a number wrong, that's the kind of thing I usually will allow to happen kind of on the fly as an oral amendment. But this sounds like there's a little bit more involved in what you're proposing. So we would be past the amendment deadline. So what I would prefer and what I'd advise to you is that you have a conversation with Representative Egbadje after this committee, and she may be able to answer your questions and point to other places in the law. I will also say, just as someone who teaches legislative process, it often drives me crazy that we're only seeing one part of this chapter of statute when you have the bill in front of you, and it may be helpful to go back and look at this entire chapter of statute, and your questions might already be answered there without amending Representative Egbadje's bill. But ultimately, that's my advice to you, Representative Weens.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm a learning organism, and I do appreciate that. And I'll get offline with Representative Dodge. Just clarifying, I think, the issue about what we're concerned about is workplace safety and health concerns, that this would not be an issue for businesses, for governmental agencies, for first responders.
Yep. No, certainly understand. Representative Weens is a business owner myself of a food business where, all these things around hair and nails and all those things are very top of mind. Certainly understand. And I think Representative Egbadje, I'm sure, is willing to have those conversations, and hopefully you can find some clarity there. Last person on the list, Vice Chair Frazier.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Egbadje, for bringing this bill. I am a co-author and proud supporter. Representative Grosso, I am disappointed that you have left the Distinguished Bald Club. Glad to have you back. Happy New Year. That's why we have beanies, man. We're Minnesotans. I have three daughters, and their hair and the way they wear it and the styles that they do is an expression of how they're feeling on a particular day. It is an outward way of showing how happy they are, how proud they are, or if they're sad or if they're down. And I often joke with them because I am bald, and I say to my youngest one, the 8-year-old Kalinda, I say, let me borrow some of your hair. And she loses her mind because she does not want to give up any of her hair. She likes to wear it in braids. She likes to wear it in Afro puffs. So I am honored to support this bill, and I'm glad you brought it. The clarity is very important. I always think it is important that our laws reflect and show that we care about, in particular, communities that have not always had the opportunity to be protected. And to some of the questions that have come up about whether or not it's for a specific community, yes, it addresses issues that have been impactful for specific communities. But oftentimes when we have civil rights or human rights laws put in place, they end up lifting up and protecting the broader community. So thank you for bringing this bill, and I'm looking forward for voting for it.
All right, Representative Agbaji, any closing comments before we move to the vote?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of the committee. I really appreciate the debate and discussion today. I think it was very fruitful. I also appreciate from hearing from members about the wanting to also have that clarity on safety concerns. So I'm happy to talk about that with Representative Weems, figure out if there's something we can do, and we can talk with the commissioner as well. Overall, I do want to say that the time is now for Minnesota to join the growing number of states that have decided to codify this into law. As we've heard, clarity is very important. As someone who has litigated cases, judges like to know exactly what they're supposed to do and exactly what they're not supposed to do. And so this is one way that we can signal to judges how to decide when cases like this come before them. In addition, it is also really important that we continue to tell Minnesotans, no matter who they are, that they are welcome in this state, that they will not be at risk of losing employment, of losing an educational opportunity, losing an athletic opportunity because of who they are. And so I encourage all of you today, after what you've heard, to vote yes on this bill. And I look forward to future conversations about how we can continue to make it better and making sure more people understand and know about it. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 37 as amended be recommended to be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right, the motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to the general register. Thank you, Representative Agbaje, and thank you to our testifiers and our first member discussion here in the Judiciary Committee. Before we head out, I do want to give folks a heads up that we will be, my plan is to move bills next week. We came to the Capitol to get work done, and we're going to do it. We will be having a presentation from the Board of Public Defense, as well as hearing the public defender funding bill on Tuesday. So that's what's on the agenda for Tuesday, and stay tuned for more postings from Anna for the rest of the bills that'll be before us. Representative Johnson.
Well, Chair Becker-Finn, I just going over the I don't know if these are the current rules now or the proposed rules that for this committee. I do have a concern on one of the rules, rule number 6. That rule was put into effect 3 years ago when we went on lockdown and went on to Zoom, because the public was not able to be on the Zoom link unless they signed up ahead of time to get the link. This is known as the people's house, where the people, we listen to the voice of the people. It's always been custom and usage during committee hearings that the public had an opportunity to speak, and that public are the ones sitting in these chairs here. If they had a concern, they could come down, sit at the testifiers' table, and discuss their concerns on a bill. The way Rule 6 reads is they would have to testify or sign up 24 hours before this committee when they don't even know what's in the bill. They haven't heard the testimony.
So Representative Johnson, first to clarify, it's 5 p.m. the day before. We meet at 8:30 a.m., so it's not 24 hours.
Correct.
And second, as you noted, I asked if there were members of the public who would like to testify, and that will continue to be the way that I run this committee. If we need to change the word from should to it's preferred or highly advised, it doesn't say must. It says should.
In another committee, it did say must.
Okay, well, That's I can't speak to other committees' rules.
I want to make sure that
Representative Johnson, I'm still speaking. I'll let you follow up. But I agree with you. And that was one thing that I think was missing when we were on Zoom was the ability. I was always the member on the committee that would remind the chair that we hadn't asked the public if there was anyone here who would like to testify. So I can promise to you that will be something that I will always do in this committee. If a member of the public, especially, I know the burden that it is for a lot of folks to drive, to find transportation here, to park, to find this room, and to come up in front of all of us and testify, and I will continue to honor that in this committee. Representative Johnson.
I appreciate that. It's just that the way the rule is written, it does appear to shut that out. Now, maybe you need to reconsider how that Rule 6 is written.
Certainly open to feedback. Thank you, Representative Johnson. All right. With that, members, thank you for getting here so we could pass a bill today, and with that, we are adjourned.